Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2, WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Hour number two of the show. The University of Miami basketball team coming off an 83-62 win over Lehigh on opening night. Tomorrow night, we'll take on Stephen F. Austin, and we are joined now by University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. Coach L, good evening. How are you?
Hi, Joe. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine. Thank you. Yes.
Game tomorrow night.
Yeah, you played very good. What were your thoughts on the opening night victory over Lehigh?
Well, Lehigh has picked to win the Patriot League this year, and they had won eight in a row going towards the end of last season. They had four starters back and won their opening game by 20. So we were very concerned going into the game because of their ability to stretch the defense and shoot the three. And with a point guard named Lance Tejada, who's from down here in Florida, from Miami, he used to be one of my campers. We knew he would be fired up and his team would be fired up trying to pull off the upset. So I thought our team responded very well. We had five guys in double figures, led by Chris Likes, 22, and Anthony Lawrence's 19 points and 12 rebounds. So a good way to start the non-conference race.
I thought your team really passed the ball well. There were some sharp passes. Anthony Lawrence, he can really switch the floor. And we've talked about his passing ability in the past, but he brings a pretty good fastball.
He does, and his versatility are going to be really required for tomorrow night. We're playing a team, Stephen F. Austin, who won their league last year, played in the NCAA tournament, has played in the NCAA tournament several years in a row now. They won 28 games, Joe. They're for real. They've got a really big backcourt, and that concerns us. Bogues and Harris are 6'3", 6'6". So they match up with Chris Likes and DJ Vasiljevic. So they're going to have a real size advantage at the guard position. But in the rest of the spots, we match up pretty well.
They also have taken their show on the road quite a bit and are one of the nation's leaders in road wins going all the way back to about the 2010 or 11 season.
Yeah, that's for sure. And they lead the country in forcing turnovers. And unfortunately for us, that's one of our weak areas. We turn the ball over too much, even when we're not pressured. So it's going to be a real test for us tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Watsco Center. I hope our students and fans will really turn out.
I thought you had a pretty good environment the other night. The students did a pretty good job for you. Chris Likes, career high for him the other night, 22 points. Should we continue to see him shooting the ball that way and being one of your top scorers?
Well, first of all, the two teams we're opening up the season with, Lehigh and Stephen F. Austin, are up-tempo teams. Lehigh averaged 77 points a game last year. So we knew there would be a high possession game and should be the same tomorrow. And that creates a lot of open court situations. And that's where Chris Likes really thrives. He's so fast, so quick, and so skilled. He can shoot the three or get to the basket for a layup. Or like we saw the other night, draw a lot of fouls. He was 8-for-11 from the free throw line. And we're hoping that combination of layups, threes, and free throws continues because I think Chris is very, very capable.
We got a chance to see Zach Johnson for the first time. Thought he gave you some pretty good minutes, 5 points in the game, but we start to see his style of play as well.
I hope Zach plays tomorrow night like he did today in practice. He was great. He was driving the ball to the basket. He dunked the ball and finished strong on two or three other occasions, hit a three, penetrated and pitched to create open threes for Anthony Lawrence and DJ Vasiljevic. So, we need Zach. This is a little bit of an adjustment for him because he's coming in off the bench. And, I didn't anticipate that coming into the season. After watching him this summer, I thought he'd be in our starting lineup. But what happened is he got an injury, and he sat out for a month and then was well behind. And by the time the season started, we basically had our rotation in place. So now we want Zach to be the best sixth man in the ACC. And if he plays tomorrow night like he did today, he's certainly going to show the fans a multitude of skills.
You, your team took 32 threes the other night. You made 14, really only a couple short of a school record. Do you think the three ball will be the weapon of choice this year?
Well, I don't know about how many we'll make this year, but we're certainly looking to shoot more of them because we have more guys who can make them. When you look at Chris Likes and DJ Vasilevich, you know, that's our backcourt, and their primary way to score is shooting threes. Anthony Lawrence has moved to the three, and he's a 40% three-point shooter for his career. And now we've got Sam Wardenberg at the four, and one of his major weapons is the three-point shot. And we've got guys who come in off the bench, like Zach Johnson, like Anthony Mack, who are both capable of knocking down threes.
I don't know much, Coach L, except one thing. Sam Wardenberg, if he gets to the free throw line, looks pretty good. I hope he gets to the line a lot.
Yeah, I do too, Joey. I think he's confident and comfortable in his free throw. He's very good driving to the right. The other night he had a three-point play that kind of almost looked awkward where he got fouled and the ball, you know, was like skyrocketing to the top of the backboard. And then it just kissed gently and drop through, like, you know, Bill Raftery says, with a kiss. Sam is a key for us. And tomorrow night, against all the pressure defense that Stephen F. Austin plays, we're going to need him handling the ball very well.
This Stephen F. Austin team, and again, to go back to it for the fans, they were in the NCAA tournament last year. They lost to Texas Tech 70-60. They were in the same regional as we were. They were in Dallas. I don't know if they played before us or after us. I don't quite remember, but pretty sure they were. They played Texas Tech. And so they've been in the tournament for the last 5 years. And I think a couple of years ago, they knocked Michigan State out in the first round. This is kind of a team that you could face, a team like this. They are a first-round tournament team when you have a good seed.
Oh, there's no question this is an NCAA tournament team. They've got a player on their team who, like Zach Johnson, is a fifth-year senior who we faced last year at Minnesota. When we played Minnesota last year, it was at their place. And I don't know if you remember Devontae Fitzgerald.
Yes.
6'8", 225.
Yep.
And a really outstanding offensive player. And he graduated from Minnesota and had a year of eligibility left. So he transferred to Stephen F. Austin, and he's our starting four man. And they've got another guy backing him up who's like a world-class athlete, a kid named Mitchell, and I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, Surreal. And he is... a Lonnie Walker, Bruce Brown, Sheldon McClellan type athlete, but it's 6'8".
Yeah, Mitchell Surreal, 215-pound freshman. You mentioned Fitzgerald. You know what's interesting about him, I think, Coach Elsa's, it's his third school. He had Minnesota,
yeah.
And I think before that it was Texas A&M, and now that's Stephen F. Austin.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, but, you know, kids play – when they're young, Joe, and I say this about all young kids in their teenage years, they'll transfer high schools, they'll transfer AAU teams, they get to college, they'll transfer colleges. I mean, you saw in the last few years, there's been about 800 Division I transfers, and there's a push that transfers should be able to play right away. So. I don't know if it's heading in that direction or not, but I know kids are not willing to just sit on the bench and wait their turn. They want to play immediately, and a lot of times a kid will graduate with a year of eligibility left, and he'll transfer to try another school just like Zach did and Devontae did.
Yeah, it is at the high school level, it's becoming the Wild West with transfers.
Yeah, and you know what we've seen from my old neighborhood in New York City? I grew up in the Bronx, went to high school in Queens. But New York City basketball is not what it once was, because those kids transfer out, go to high schools in Jersey, or go to prep schools in New England, or go to prep schools down south. So kids are traveling a lot and all over the country.
I guess it's a double-edged sword, right? On one hand, maybe if you're looking at a kid, you'd like to say, well, some continuity, consistency in your life, want to see you stick it out, fight for the competition, battle for your spot, compete, all of those things. On the other hand, sometimes they're trying to get themselves into a better position to play, to be seen, because maybe their way or their parents' thinking's way to a better life is a scholarship.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you know, we're not talking about just kids who want to play in the ACC or Big Ten or SEC. We're talking about kids whose parents are saying, hey, if my son can get a Division II scholarship or a low-level Division I scholarship, and, you know, private schools, $70,000 a year, talking about a $300,000 scholarship. So, you know, those opportunities for young men and their parents to save that kind of money on their education is so valuable. And there are 351 Division I schools that offer 13 scholarships. Each of them offers 13 scholarships. So that's a lot of spots to compete for. And then add to that the number of Division II schools that offer scholarships. And that you're talking about thousands of opportunities for kids who play high school basketball.
I wanted to ask you this question. I had this discussion a little while ago with somebody else, and we were talking about players at the college level. And they said to me, well, I think so-and-so might lack confidence. And I said, you know, I'm not sure that a lot of players lack confidence. I think they all believe, whether it's basketball, football, or baseball, that they're going to play at the next level. I said, sometimes I think what they lack is perspective. What would be your thought on that?
Actually, I think it varies in both categories. All right, so let's start with confidence, Joe. There might be a player in high school that has tremendous confidence in himself at that level. And he believes wholeheartedly, I'm going to be a great college player and eventually play in the NBA. He then gets to college, and all of a sudden, he stepped up a level in competition, and he starts to question his own shooting ability or ball handling ability or even just ability to compete at this level. And his confidence will wane. And one of the jobs of a coaching staff, and I know my staff and I deal with this all the time, is continue to build self-esteem and build that confidence so it can't be shaken. Even if you have a bad game or a bad week, I've had players who have gone through shooting slumps. I had one player who was going through it. He was our leading scorer in November, December, January, and in February he couldn't make a shot. And at the end of February, I said to him, listen, you know, you need to believe in yourself because you know I do. And he said, are you going to take me out of the starting lineup? I said, absolutely not. I called you in to tell you had the green light, the super green light. Just shoot it. Quit thinking so much and just shoot it. And sure enough, he bounced back and had himself an incredible end of February and the month of March. And that's what happens. Guys go through ups and downs. They're not always as confident. Now, as far as perspective is concerned, I think it's very, very hard with what players are told at young ages to have the proper perspective because all of them are being told how great they are. And it's by so many people. If they're being recruited, it's by, you know, college coaches who are impressed with their abilities. Oftentimes it's the parents or the relatives, or sometimes it's the classmates, the friends. It can be the high school coach or AAU coach, but kids are getting a lot of positive feedback, and so they kind of lose perspective that there are other kids out there who are working just as hard, who are just as talented, if not more talented, and that the most important thing is you earn your playing time. Nothing is given to you. Everything has to be earned.
That's right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, talk more about Stephen F. Austin. I got Bethune on the weekend, and then the Hurricanes will go west for Thanksgiving tournament. So we'll talk about those things with Coach L, who I put on hold. If I hit the wrong button, Danny, you put him on hold. And we'll continue with Coach L right after this here on the Hurricane Hotline.
This is Hurricane Hotline on AM 560 and 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, back to Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
Hurricanes and Stephen F. Austin tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at the Watsco Center. We'll be on the air at 6:30 as we count down to tip-off. And 7 o'clock, we'll tip it off, Miami and Stephen F. Austin. Coach, you mentioned those guards in the backcourt, Bogues and Harris. One 6'3", the other is 6'6". And then Bain, he's a 6'6 player, so they do have some pretty good size.
Oh, their perimeter, Joe, is very big and athletic. And that's a major concern of ours. That's why I was so happy to see Zach Johnson practice so well, because Zach's got the physicality of a Bruce Brown. And we're going to need him to guard one of those big studs from Stephen F. Austin.
You know, we have a new stat system this year that comes out during the timeouts, and it gives you the plus-minus on players. I'm curious, do you pay attention to those kind of metrics?
All the time.
Even during the game or after the game?
During. Joe, I want to tell you something that was funny that happened last week. Michigan State played Kansas. And after the game was over, my good friend Tom Izzo was being interviewed. And they handed him the new stat sheet. And it's smaller print and more information and quite honestly, if you've never seen that stat sheet before, it's hard to read.
Yes. Thank
and
you.
Tom was like, what is this? And the reporters were kind of making fun, like he couldn't read a stat sheet. But the stat sheet is so different from years past. Now, the question I want to answer is, do I use it during the game? And the answer is yes. But I don't look at it. My staff is in charge of that. So Chris Caputo, who's my associate head coach and my defensive coordinator, is constantly feeding me information. Adam Fisher, who is my offensive coordinator, he's constantly sharing information about the offense. And Pooh Williamson is our scout team coordinator. He's sharing information about the opponent and what's going on with them. So, like when we played Lehigh, Sam Wardenberg was doing an absolutely terrific job on their leading scorer, Pat Andre. And now we got ready to sub. And I asked Coach Caputo, who do we put on Andre now? Because if we take Sam out, I don't want him getting it going. And we put in freshman Dang Gak, and he proceeds to block three shots right at the rim. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to have that information as to who the best matchups are, who's got the hot hand, who's, you know, if you look at the plus minus and say so-and-so's a plus 10, you want to leave him in the game because he's playing really well with his teammates. He may not even be scoring, but if his unit is doing good, you want to keep that five-man unit out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting, you are right. The first time they handed it to me, I had to give it a double or triple look. I was like, okay, a little bit smaller. Maybe my eyes aren't quite as good as they used to be. But I do think it's interesting, and I figured you would be in on some of the metrics. down the road this weekend, you have Bethune-Cookman coming in on Saturday, and then you take the team to the West Coast. You will be playing in a Thanksgiving tournament starting on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, you know, we signed up for 5 years with ESPN to play in their exempt events. Last year, Hawaii. This year, it's California, Anaheim, Disneyland. It's a great field. We play LaSalle in the first round. We've got Seton Hall and Utah, Northwestern, a lot of very good teams in the tournament. You know, then the following year, we're in Charleston, South Carolina, and then or Orlando, and then Puerto Rico. Or maybe it's Puerto Rico, then Orlando.
Is it next year we go to 20 conference games? Do you think when you go to the 20 conference games, some of those, or at least one of those, would be early? Do you think that will have any impact on some of these tournaments?
Well, we already know we're going to open up the season that very first week with an ACC game. I think we either play Tuesday or Wednesday next year, a conference game at home or on the road, but very, very early. And so this year we opened up at Lehigh. Next year we could be opening up with might be Carolina, Duke, or Wake Forest or somebody.
Yeah.
But the league is going to 20 games. We're going to still be playing in that ESPN exempt event. That's another three high major opponents. We have the ACC Big Ten Challenge. That's another high major opponent. That's a minimum of 24 games against great teams. So I hope the selection committee realizes what the ACC is doing and does not use that against us if you lose some of those games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a winning record against 24 high major teams, you should qualify for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah,
because that's basically what the NCAA tournament says, is we want you to be able to win in group one or group one and group two. And those are the top 50 to 100 teams in the country. Well, we're going to be playing at least 24 of them.
Well, my bet is on the 20 games, the ACC network starts in August. So my bet is it's a good program for the ACC network, and the opening weekend or the opening week of college basketball, I think they're trying to make that a blockbuster, much like you have in football with the big games on the opening weekend. I think they're going to try to do that in basketball as well, and that's going to mean some conference games early in the season.
Well, you saw that the tip-off for college basketball was Michigan State, Kansas, and Duke, Kentucky. So that will be either pushed back or eliminated because of these two extra games.
Yeah. And I do think, I would imagine, basketball, you know, well, I guess in football too, it's you play those big games early, and especially a conference game, they're so crucial. Your best basketball probably doesn't come until later in the season when you sort out your team. And so that means you got to be up and ready to go really, really fast.
Well, I think the early games favor the teams that bring back a lot of veterans.
Yeah.
Now, other than like Duke. Duke, they got five freshmen, and those guys, well, they started four freshmen and a junior, and they played like they were fifth-year seniors and ready to be first-round draft choices.
Yeah, Zion Williams, he seemed to capture the country last week.
Oh, ridiculous. His vertical jump at 280 pounds is, I think, unheard of. I cannot think of another player. The closest thing I can think of is like LeBron or Charles Barkley. Guys who, you know, are not thin, long-legged, just jumping jacks. No, this is, you know, guys who look like they belong on a football field.
As you were watching that, did the coach part of you come out and say, oh, boy, let me think how we're going to defend him in February?
Oh, I do that every time I watch a game, Joe. Every time I watch an ACC game or an ACC team play, whether it's an ACC game or not, we're trying to plan for when we would face that opponent.
I find that not surprising.
Well, you know, the thing about it is we have so many games on video now that we can watch every game an opponent plays. There's a technology called Synergy. And Synergy downloads every college basketball game on their website. We can go on their website and pull up the game. We can watch segments of the game. We can watch the whole game. We can even ask, hey, just show us plays after timeouts. Or show us plays where Zion Williamson scores. And it'll just bring up those plays. You can watch individuals. You can watch teams. You can watch plays. It's amazing the video that's out there and how much we use it. Mm-hmm. Our video coordinator, Jeff Dyer, I mean, he pulled up stuff from, how about this? Just in this week, we pulled up clips from our Carolina game from last year. We pulled up clips from the University of Virginia versus the USSR in 1982, played at the Richmond Coliseum. And you say, well, why would you do that? I said, because Arvydas Sabonis, everybody was talking about now, he's in the Hall of Fame and how great he was and how great he was when he was young and no one saw him when he was in his prime. So I told my staff, hey, we got video on it. It's on YouTube. We can pull it right up and watch Arvydas when he was 18 years old go against Ralph Sampson and the Virginia Cavaliers. Rick Carlisle was on the team, the coach of the Dallas Mavericks. And sure enough, we watched about the first 5 or 6 minutes.
That's very funny. All right, tomorrow is Stephen F. Austin. We look forward to it. And I'll see you tomorrow before the game for our little pregame chat. And we'll see what this game brings us. But I think it's going to be a heck of a basketball game tomorrow night.
Oh, it's going to be an exciting game, Joe. Up and down. It's going to be the wild, wild west.
The Lumberjacks are coming to town. So that'll be a good one. I'll see you tomorrow, Coach. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, that's University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. When we come back, Katie Meyer's team is off to a 3-0 start, all three wins by at least a dozen, two by over 20 and one by over 50. We'll talk with Katie when we come back here on the Hurricane Hotline.